Faith Middleton. Thank you so much for listening. In Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. As always, this show is about the richness of life, and we're going to talk about the health exchange in Connecticut, a little bit about the federal exchange. We're going to answer as many of your questions as we can, but first we're going to try and get lots and lots of information out on the floor for you. And we intend to have this show many times coming up in the weeks and months ahead, because I think so many of us are confused about many aspects of the Connecticut Health Exchange and the federal Obamacare exchange. Okay, so some of us are trying to make our way through the Connecticut Insurance Exchange. We want to understand the basics. Who qualifies really? What does your income have to be? Is this just for what we keep hearing, working poor, or is it really for everybody? Do we feel like the exchange is working in this first month? It's been open a month. That's not a lot of time. But as we know, there can be problems in the beginning. We're hearing that some companies are dropping health care. Businesses of all kinds. We hear that some insurance companies are dropping people. Is that true? Why is that? Here's a question. Have you gotten a rebate because your medical insurance company spent too much on things other than patient health? That is the law. Did you see a rebate if your health insurance company did this? So this show is just a start in education about this. Our guests are Francis Padilla and Jill Zorn of the Universal Healthcare Foundation, and Randy Oster, who lives in Fairfield, Connecticut, is a self-appointed healthcare advocate and educator. She has spoken at 30 libraries across Connecticut, and you know, these folks in the room are like rock stars in the healthcare world, because you can ask them any question and they start talking and saying fascinating things. I race for a pen to write it down so I will get it very quickly, because we don't want to spend too much time on deep background. Why was Obamacare started in the first place? Really quick, Francis Padilla.
Hi, Faith. Thank you for having us on the show today. Well, you know, the Affordable Care Act was enacted because the costs of health care in this country have gone on an unending increase over the last 20 years.
To imply that the exchange, setting up exchanges or federal Obamacare, is going to make that less, is that an accurate assessment?
That is a part of the design of the Affordable Care Act over the long haul. Now, along with rising health care costs, we've had an increase in people uninsured, which is a byproduct of many of the problems in the health care system. And so 50 million people uninsured in the country. We spend more than most developed countries of the world, and we get worse health outcomes on some of the most basic fronts. And so it has been a long time coming that we take some bold national action.
Okay, and so here we are with Obamacare. It's had a bumpy start. So now the rule was that individual states could set up exchanges, as Connecticut has done, or they could just let the feds take care of it. How many have done what Connecticut has done, and how many? Randy Oster.
Hi. Well, first of all, thank you. There are 15 states that actually decided to embrace and take care of their own citizens. Mm-hmm. The rest of the country has either gone into partnership with the federal government or has said, do it all for us. In Connecticut, we were one of the first states out of the gate, and we've been a leader since we've started so early with coming up with the exchange.
So let me ask a quick grade on a couple of things. Is the Connecticut exchange, Jill Zorn, better in terms of what we have access to than the federal exchange?
Oh, if you're going to grade the Connecticut exchange, which is called Access Health CT, compared to the federal, I think we might get an A+. As far as our website, it's completely working. Connecticut is doing very well.
I don't mean how it's implemented.
Yeah.
I mean, do we have better benefits? Do we have... A better access to better plans than the federal one would?
Well, no. I mean, a lot of the rules about the plans are the same going across the country. And we have, in Connecticut, we have a choice of 3 plans. In some states, you might have more choice. In some states, you might have less choice. So there's a wide variation in choices, but the actual types of plans are somewhat controlled by the law, how good the benefits are.
So if you were looking, we're only 1 month into the Connecticut exchange. And so this is a grade based on, pretend you had your kids in school and you got an early grade after 1 month. What grade would you give how this is going so far, just 1 month in?
On implementation?
Yeah.
I think I'd give it an A- or B+. An A- I think is because we haven't had major shutdowns. The Access Health CT folks have been working to make sure that the navigators and assisters, these individuals and organizations that are available to help people, are up and running, and that's a work in progress. And just this past week, they opened up the first of several storefronts that are going to be available so that people don't have to rely just on the website.
So, Jill Zorn, what grade would you give?
I would say like a B+.
Okay. And Randy Oster?
I would have to grade it based on the fact that we do have people signed up. We've had to the call center over 26,000 calls answered.
And how many signed up?
Last week it was 7,600.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Is that a good number compared to other states?
It's a lot more than was expected to sign up in the first month in Connecticut. So it's very good.
Is that a high number compared to other states, or is that a fair comparison because we're a small state?
We don't have a lot of uninsured faith, so that's one of the challenges. So we're never going to have, you know, 500,000 people signing up because we only have maybe 300,000 total uninsured.
Let's talk about how we in Connecticut qualify. If you don't like the Connecticut exchange, can you apply to the federal exchange as an individual?
No.
Okay.
No.
So you have a choice of your own private care. You can pay a fine and have no care, or you can go to the Connecticut exchange.
If you're uninsured or if you have very bad insurance. So not if you have good insurance now, you can't choose to go to the exchange. If you have good insurance through your employer, you can't just decide to go to the exchange.
And it's considered affordable.
Right.
So and that's an important thing. So for the listeners that have health insurance through their employer and it is considered affordable, then that...
Affordable by whom?
And this is the definition of affordable. Affordable is defined as 9.5% of your family income. So just do that math in your head right now. It's about 9.5% of your family income. And if you're
maximum.
And if you're spending... So if you're spending 25% of your income on your health insurance through your employer... You are eligible to go to the exchange to see if there are products there. And if there are products and you qualify for subsidies, you may get those subsidies as well.
Okay. So let's talk about the plans that are at the exchange for just a minute. If you go to the exchange, you will see that the lowest plan, meaning the most affordable plan, is, $300 and something a month. Then when you look at the copay or the deductible, it's, is it $2,500 or $3,600? Anyway, that ends up coming out to, for a person, about $500 a month. So that's a lot of money for someone who makes just over the limit that they're setting in terms of income. What is that limit?
It depends on how many people in the family.
Okay.
So if you're a single person, you can make up to $45,960 and still get subsidies.
So if I make $46,000, that $500 on $46,000 is a lot of money because
limit.
my Mm-hmm. So what about that? Is that an area we have to fix?
Well, one thing is that you have a choice of several different levels of plans, bronze, silver, and gold. And
this
so
was
you
the
can low, look
this
at,
was the most
if,
affordable.
If you pick the most affordable in premiums, it's going to have higher deductibles and copays. One of the good things about the way they structured the benefits in at least some of these plans is that the deductible doesn't kick in right away. And so you can go to the doctor and you just pay a copay. You don't have to worry about the deductible except if something catastrophic, like you end up in the hospital. So it really, you can't assume that someone will have to dig into their deductible in some of these plans if they're actually able to go to the doctor.
It's also important to understand that the subsidies that are available through the exchange based on income are only available if you select the silver plan. So the three levels are bronze, silver, and gold. And the subsidies are tied to the silver plan. Mm-hmm. So you can, in fact, you may pay a little bit more for a silver plan, but actually be eligible for more subsidy or subsidies that you wouldn't be eligible for a bronze plan.
Why doesn't the state of Connecticut offer everybody this access to these exchanges without these income limits?
Well, everyone has access to the exchange. Mm-hmm. It's just a question of will they be subsidized for the insurance.
Yeah.
So anyone can go on the exchange and you can purchase the insurance on the exchange as well.
Is there an advantage to doing that, or is it really based on your individual policy?
It really depends, because you can also buy a new plan outside of the marketplace. So if you're eligible for subsidies or want to see if you're eligible for subsidies, you should check out the marketplace first. If you're not worried about subsidies, then you should look inside and outside. The plans are probably fairly similar inside and outside, but you're only eligible to get the subsidy inside the marketplace.
Randy Oster, are the plans similar inside and outside?
So the plans that are offered on the exchange, you can also get in the private marketplace. And my understanding is the price on the exchange and outside, the price is the same as well. What you do want to double check on is who are the providers and who is being covered. And it's fairly easy to do. If you go to the website, they actually have a little button and you can click on and say, is my doctor included in this plan? And you type in your doctor's name and it will tell you.
Now, if you look at in creation of the plan and enforcement behind the plan, we know that there's a panel of advisors. The hard question I want to ask you is this all dependent? What if people are a little bit afraid to sign up at the exchange because they think, well, right now we have Governor Malloy who spent a lot of effort and his team making this happen, and you all seem to like it. What if Governor Malloy isn't there and someone less friendly to government intervention is suddenly in the office? How will that affect me? I've signed up through the Connecticut Exchange. What about this?
Well, I think that first of all, we are very focused on how well or not so well the exchanges are operating in this first 45 days. Mm-hmm. This is the beginning of a 3-year trajectory. The implementation of the exchanges, whether it be the federal exchange or the state-based exchanges, and here in Connecticut, is really 3 years. So for the next 3 years, we are committed essentially to offering the products that are available through the exchange. And it is highly unlikely that any newly elected governor, for instance, would come along and be able to dismantle the exchange.
What about the appointments to the advisory panel?
Well, those are people who serve on the board of this quasi-public agency who are serving terms that are multiple years.
Would the appointments affect what the...
Well, certainly the governor and the leadership of the state legislature are the appointing authorities for the board of directors of the of Health Access Health CT, and when it comes time for new appointments to be made, they will select people that they feel, you know, they agree with. And so the policies of the exchange, and I don't mean the insurance policies, I mean the implementation policies of the exchange may vary. However, there are certain requirements that the federal government has of all the exchanges that have to be met. The essential health benefits, for example, those were dictated essentially by the federal government. And there are, you know, policies that really cannot be easily changed. So I wouldn't worry a great deal about that.
Randy Oster, Francis Padilla, Jill Zorn, these are people who are experts on health care, not only nationally, but right here, the Connecticut Insurance Exchange. And so we're going to take a quick break, and then your calls at 203-776-9677. I bet we're going to get some. Stay with us. You can find what we talk about on the show online anytime at WNPR.org. Right now, you can see delicious things, recipes for dinner, value wines, easy cocktails, Thanksgiving prep, lots of it. Click on programs at WNPR.org for the Faith Middleton Show. My three guests are Randy Oster, who's a healthcare advocate and educator, self-appointed and lives in Fairfield, Connecticut, has personally had a lot of experience within the healthcare system and has been talked to 30 libraries across Connecticut, and very knowledgeable people from the Universal Healthcare Foundation, Director Francis Padilla and Senior Program Officer Jill Zorn, and they're here for you to answer your questions. I wanted to say one thing as we take calls. You told me that if you go on the exchange, and anybody can go, it's just that for some people in certain income brackets, you might get a federal subsidy for your payment. But actually, anybody can use the exchange. Be sure to check the following things. Are your doctors covered? There's a button there that you can click to find out. What kinds of, are your prescriptions covered? Now, the difficulty is who can know what prescriptions are coming. What about hospitals? The hospitals you regularly use, are they covered? And specialists, if you use specialists or think you're going to need specialists, you might want to look at that. A question quickly about hospitals. Does it state on the exchange whether these insurance companies that are in these three plans cover, does it list the hospitals that they cover?
I don't think that it does. And so people, after they are zeroing in on which of the three health plans they're thinking of choosing, they should definitely check, does that health plan cover the hospital I'm interested in using?
Is that something that needs to get fixed?
I'm not sure. At a certain point, you need to go to the health plan's website. You know, there's no way that all that information will always be on the Access Health CT website.
So you don't think that's one of the most important things? I just want to be clear on that.
I think it's important that people check. I don't think it's something that has to be fixed on the website. I think it's something that we have to take some ownership for. And when we choose a product, to go to the people that are providing that product and double check.
I'm not adding to the – yes, Francis,
I'd like to clarify something. We're referring to three health plans. There are more than three plans available through Access Health CT.
Yeah, sorry, I know you do.
It's three companies that are offering plans.
That's what I mean,
And within the different levels of coverage, there are multiple plans. So people have a fair amount to choose from.
And to do.
And to do, of course.
To look at. In these plans, is there any one of these plans that you know of on the Connecticut Exchange, Insurance Exchange, that allows you to cross state lines if you happen to be traveling or you have a specialist in New York City? What do you know, Randy Oster?
Well, I think the answer is there's in-network and then there's out-of-network. And
so your out-of-network can cross state lines?
Yes, you could be out-of-network. Mm-hmm. But one of the things you do need to check is some of the plans treat your children that if your child lives in Florida and let's say you're in Connecticut, you need to check, is that considered an out-of-network or in-network? And those are some differences that are in the plans that what I would suggest is as you're going through this, talk to an assister Or on the website, they even help you find an insurance agent that can start to answer these questions.
These paid people? People you have to hire?
No. Mm-hmm. No. So
you mean
these,
from the companies, insurance
right.
companies.
Yes. Okay. And so you can make those phone calls and you can reach out to get answers to these questions.
Okay, Deborah, Faith Middleton and the gang, welcome to our show on the Connecticut Health Exchange. Go ahead, Deborah.
Hi, Faith.
Hi.
We're a family of four, and we have been through the entire process. I was probably one of the first people to go onto the Access Health website.
Okay.
So we are qualified to purchase insurance through the exchange. We do qualify for the federal subsidy. We have committed to a particular plan. I have my fingers crossed that this is really going to happen, but this is going to be life-changing for us.
How is it going to be life-changing?
Well, let me give you the before and after, okay?
As you can.
Okay. Husband works for a small company. Our health insurance currently costs $1,500 a month with a $5,900 deductible. We pay $1,300 of that. The employer pays $200. Given the deductible, every year we consistently have over $20,000 of medical expenses that we pay for, over half of our income.
Wow.
Okay?
Yep.
This gives us better coverage for a lower price. With the subsidy, we're going to be paying $400 for a gold plan with a $2,000 deductible. It's going to be good for the economy because we're going to have disposable income. But I will tell you, Faith, that from the consumer point of view, yes, I agree Connecticut is an A-plus relative to the federal government, but that's not the comparison. You need to compare it to something like Google or Amazon. And, I have...
I don't follow that. What do you mean?
The website experience.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I mean, I made it work because I was very, very motivated and I'm good with computers. But I think everyone close to it would have to agree that there's work ahead to reach out to people who are less motivated, like young people or less educated or less computer savvy.
Okay. Excellent point. Thank you so much. And congratulations. I'm really happy for you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks for calling, Deborah. 203-776-9677. We have a whole group of healthcare experts in the office lined up for you to have you fire questions so that we can understand all of this more. Can I ask a quick question about Medicare? People do not qualify for Obamacare.
That's right.
So why is that, Jill Zorn?
Well, I think the law, as far as the access part of the law, it was written to try to address the places where people have trouble accessing insurance, and that was individuals buying their own insurance and small businesses. And Medicare, while it's not perfect, people have access to care. And we had a situation in this country where people were praying to reach 65 so that they could finally get insurance. So they are covered, at least.
Okay. Well, one quick statement, and then I go straight to the phones about Medicare. Jill Zorn, you've learned from experience with your mother that there is a specific category, if you're on Medicare, that can be kind of dangerous to you financially. And what is that? Can you quickly say?
So if listeners are on standard Medicare.
Standard.
It's standard, not Medicare Advantage programs. And they're admitted to the hospital, and they're going to need rehab. Let's say they're having their knee fixed or a hip replacement. What happens after you have the surgery? You go to rehab. Medicare will pay for your rehab the first 20 days. They pay 100%. Day 21 to day 100, you have a copay. After day 100, they don't pay. Here's the thing that your listeners need to know. You have to be admitted to the hospital for 3 days for Medicare to pay. Sometimes people think they're admitted to the hospital because they're in the hospital, they see the nurse, they see the monitors, they're eating the food, but they've been classified as being observed and not admitted.
So you need to ask.
You need to ask, and this is very important because if you're being observed and you expect to get reimbursed for rehab, it will not qualify. And what I want them to know is if they go in on Monday and they ask, they go, okay, I listened to the show, I asked, and they told me I was admitted. You know what they need to do on Tuesday? Ask again. And you know what you do on Wednesday? ask again.
Why?
Because the hospital can change your status any day. And so this is just what we believe is by patients and loved ones having information and empowerment, we can improve our situation.
What would be the advantage to the hospital doing that? Why would a hospital do that?
So right now what happens is if patients are readmitted into a hospital within 30 days, Medicare penalizes them. That's considered like a defect, like you shouldn't have had to come back within 30 days. Mm-hmm. And so what's happening now is they're being careful that we don't want to have the readmissions coming. And so they've come up with this classification. At this point, we just need to know as consumers and as patients and as loved ones what the rules are, and then we can play the game effectively.
Okay. So you want to ask admitted or observed, and unfortunately in your sick condition in the hospital.
And that's for
you
Medicare.
You have to ask every single day if you're on Medicare.
Yes.
Okay. And Frances Padilla, you wanted to add.
Well, you know, this is under the ACA, there is a concerted effort to improve the accountability.
Affordable Care Act.
Under the Affordable Care Act, there is a concerted effort to improve accountability. And in this particular example, the 30-day readmission issue is part of really pushing back on hospitals by the federal government, by the Medicare program, to ensure that the people that they discharge do not come back because they have been appropriately cared for. They have avoided infections. They have dealt with the issues that
sure.
they have. But as Randy points out, if a person goes to rehab and then has an issue during the time they're in rehab and
sure.
comes back,
yeah.
hospitals are concerned that that doesn't get counted against
yeah.
them.
I understand.
And so the consumer ends up being the victim in a sense
caught in the middle
of this
negotiation
between the hospital and its payer. And it does. I totally agree with Randy. We as consumers have to become hyper educated about all of these things and ask many times.
I was in a doctor's office recently and met people from England, and we were having a very big discussion in the waiting room, having a thing back and forth about the difference between healthcare in England and in the United States. And I was so surprised by how informed these, after they describe what they do, average citizens were about their healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not so sure that we in the United States have gotten there yet, but so this is the start of that for us, maybe. Jim, Faith Middleton and the gang, welcome to our show on the Connecticut Insurance Exchange. Go ahead.
Yes, hi. Great show. I hope you have more of these.
Yeah, we are, Jim. Thanks.
Oh, gosh. We have a family of four, and I have a different story than the other woman. Our adjusted gross income is about $95,000. I do not consider us rich. We're middle class in this part of Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the Waterford, East Lyme area.
Right, got it.
And I get no subsidy. But it's not affordable. It's sky high.
You mean at the exchange you get no subsidy?
At the exchange I get no subsidy because I'm not below $94,000, whatever it is. I'm at $95,000. And my wife just picked an extra day at work. And now we're thinking of her reducing the day, taking that day off so that we might be eligible, but we don't want to be de-incentivized to not work so we can get a subsidy. So there's this big drop-off. You go from subsidy to no subsidy for somebody who makes $2,000 less
oh,
a year.
Oh, Jim.
And it's such a bummer.
Jim, let me just say this to you. I'm acting like this because just before the show began, we were talking about your category.
Mm-hmm.
I was
middle class.
Yeah, you're
not affordable.
Yeah, you're just a hair past that income level, and so family of four, $95,000 a year, and you can't get the federal subsidy. So remember, we were talking about this. What do we, Jill's
on? Well, I think there's always, unfortunately, whenever you pass a law like this, there's always going to be a line, and some people are going to be on one side of it, and some.
Why don't they just phase it down, though? I mean,
it is phased down. It is gradual moving up to 94,000, yeah, but at some point so the subsidy at 93,000 is probably not that huge as opposed to maybe a family of four with.
I put it in, it's like $300 a month.
So
it's a pretty good
chunk
right away at 90. As soon as you put it below 94, it's mm-hmm. like 380. It's a pretty
yeah.
nice chunk.
Yeah.
We're going to pay through the nose for health insurance.
So, in Massachusetts, the law that this was patterned after stopped at an even lower place. So, from that perspective, going from 300% of federal poverty level, which is what the Massachusetts law did, to 400 was a good increase. But there are always going to be people. It is really frustrating.
Isn't that amazing that Jim, his spouse, is considering lowering her salary, taking a day off a week to be able to qualify for the subsidy? That's a family of four. Frances Padilla?
You know, I just want to say that I think that this is one of the difficult challenges of public policy, and in all of the government medical programs, like the Children's Health Insurance Program, mm-hmm. which started in the 90s, and in the Medicaid program, there's this issue of churning where people reach that point where they're no longer eligible and they wind up coming off, having to come off. That doesn't necessarily mean that they can now afford to buy insurance, you know, elsewhere. It just means that they are now not eligible because they're over income. I think that this is where, as consumers, it is so important to be able to speak to our policymakers and to make the case for alternatives that can be used for softening that transition. I mean, there will come a point, as Jill suggested, that, you know, if it's 100,000, then it's 100,000, and there'll come a point where you're not eligible. But to figure out ways that you can avoid the types of unintended incentives to not work, as the caller suggests, we need to let our policymakers know, as citizens of the state, as consumers of healthcare, that this doesn't work for a very significant chunk of people, and come forward with strategies that can be used. And again, no strategy is going to be completely perfect, but we do need to make that case.
Let me ask you: do you think this is like Jim? Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
I really appreciate it. Do you think this is like the start of Social Security and Medicare, when things were bumpy in the beginning, and then as time went on, tweak over the years? Is it like that? And we just have the, you know, the timing is everything. We just happen to be the first group.
Well, let me respond quickly, and I think Randy and Jill might have something to add. I think, you know, if we had health care for everyone, if everyone was in, we wouldn't have these cutoffs. And I think the Medicare program is an example of that. So if you're over 65, that's the only criteria. It doesn't matter if you are high income or low income. You belong to the Medicare program.
Sick or not sick, yeah.
Sick or not sick, you belong to the Medicare program. And so the challenge of not having a program that everyone belongs in is that some people then are in with subsidies up to a certain amount of income, and some people are not.
Would that work in a place like Connecticut to have health care for everyone, as you call it? The other word would be universal health care, which really doesn't explain what it is. Health care for everyone is a much better term. Would something like that work in Connecticut? Would it be wildly more costly for Connecticut, or even better in terms of the kinds of deals that we could make with insurance companies, pharmaceutical people? What do you think?
Well,
Frances Padilla, Jill Zorin.
It's the $64,000 question, Faith. And, you know, we could have, in a state like Connecticut, a public plan. We tried to have a public plan in the state in 2009 to 2011. There was a big push for the creation of a plan that would be offered by the state government. And perhaps not everyone was in it, but a good third of the state's population would be eligible for it. It was fought tooth and nail by the insurance industry and other, you know, vested interests. Could we do, you know, Vermont passed a single payer law a few years ago.
And which means?
Single payer means that there's no insurance companies at all, and that there would be only one payer, and that would be the state government. They are moving in that direction quite gradually.
Who is moving in that direction?
The state of Vermont. They passed a law in 2011. They're working right now on dealing with cost and quality issues, because even if you do have everyone covered, if we're not dealing with the underlying cost of health care, the drivers of the cost of health care, then it's very hard to sustain. But could Connecticut as a state have something better than what we have now? I think so.
Is it likely, in terms of the fact that we are one of the insurance capitals of the world?
Well, we are, and it's an important part of our state economy. It's an important part of the national economy, and a number of the imperfections of the Affordable Care Act actually are due to the fact that the insurance industry was very, very emphatic about, you know, not having a public plan competing against them in the marketplace, for example.
And so in Connecticut, is it likely that because we have so many insurance companies and frankly, there are very effective lobbyists in Connecticut, making their case on behalf of the insurance companies. Legislators are trying to listen to everybody. Is it likely in this scenario?
It's a heavy lift, but it depends how strongly people in the state feel about fighting for something that they believe in and they think is important.
My position when I'm talking with people out in the state of Connecticut is I say we have to look at what the law is right now. And right now the law says that January 1st, 2014, we must all have insurance that meets minimum essential benefits. What's going to happen in the future? We got to make sure we're prepared today and understand how we prepare ourselves and take those steps. What happens in the future? We will see, but if we're not ready to meet the requirements that have been already handed down to us, we're going to be paying penalties as citizens.
203-776-9677, our conversation on the Connecticut Insurance Exchange and Obamacare continues after this break. Tweet us at FaithWNPR. That's FaithWNPR. Join the conversation on the Connecticut Health Insurance Exchange and Obamacare. You can join our conversation now or anytime on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to you for listening and to our talented team, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. I have three very knowledgeable people with me in the studio for your benefit so that you can ask questions. We get as much information out as possible. We're going to continue these shows in the weeks and months ahead. If you would like to call in, the number is 203-776-9677. As I go to the phones, a quick question. Many people think there has something Medicare is somehow affiliated with the Connecticut Insurance Exchange. Randy Oster, is that true?
So if you're on Medicare, first of all, you don't need to do anything. It's important for those people to know that they're okay. They don't have to meet minimum essential coverage.
When you say okay, do you mean have to join Medicare?
They do not. Well, they have Medicare, but they do not have to get other insurance. They're fine.
Could they if they wanted to?
They would not find – there's no product on the exchange to even get anything there. It's not offered because they have Medicare.
Could they bypass Medicare and go to the exchange is what I'm asking.
Let's say someone wanted to and they saw the prices, they'll be very happy with their Medicare.
That's what I'm trying to find out. Very good.
They'll be very happy with
it. All right. Let's take a call. Christopher Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Hi, Faith. Good afternoon. Thank you.
You're welcome.
The timing of the show couldn't be better. I was just talking to my fiancé and her mother-in-law yesterday about this. The new website is very user-friendly. It's driving me up a wall. I can't seem to convince it that I intend to be married next year. But the big concern I've had with this entire process is it's not readily clear what we're trading in these different meta levels. Is it just the cost of the premium, things like that? The 10-second backstory, my fiancé and I are expecting our first in February. We'll be married in June, and the system can't seem to handle that. And I'm afraid that if I go with a lower metal level, I'll be compromising coverage or care or options for the two of them.
Christopher is talking about the classification on the Connecticut Insurance Exchange. of plans so that it would be bronze, silver, and gold. And the price goes up, so do the benefits. The copays go up or down depending on what level you're at. Christopher, you make an interesting point. Randy Oster, as a health advocate and educator, you've been talking at about 30 libraries around Connecticut. How do you respond?
You do need to look at not only what your premium is, but what your copays are and what your deductibles are. And you have to look at the entire package and see what works for you. So the answer to the question is it's not just the premium that changes with the silver and the bronze and the gold.
I would say to your caller that he ought to go talk with a navigator or a sister or an insurance agent.
Because, where do you get one?
In your local community, depending on where you live, you can go to the Access Health CT website and you can find out where you find people to talk to.
Are there enough people to talk to right now, do you folks think?
There are many, many people who have been certified, and it is an ongoing effort to make sure that there are people in local communities. Not every question will be answered via the website.
Or call the 800 number of Access Health CT. And think about the fact you know there's a hospitalization in your future, and that's really where those deductibles kick in. Mm-hmm. So you really might want to be thinking about a plan that has a lower deductible you're going to use the hospital to have a baby.
If you have a thank you, Christopher, so much, by the way. If you have pre-existing conditions under the new law, starting when are insurance companies prevented from denying you coverage?
January 1st.
Okay, January 1st. And so people signing up now will begin to be covered by what you choose on January 1st. Will enrollment continue after that day, just as it exists now? Is this thing constantly changing? Is it better to wait until to see if you get even more benefits as time goes on?
Well, the thing is, for this year, for the first year, for individuals and families, the enrollment period goes through the end of March. But once you reach January 1st and you're still not insured, you are subject to the penalty. There is a penalty for people for not signing up. So it's structured to encourage people to enroll during this year. But because it's the first year, you do have through the end of March to enroll. Then there'll be a break for individuals unless something happens like you get married or you lose your job or something like that. Otherwise, you have to wait probably until the following fall before you have another chance.
So, Randy, can you change your mind? After you join one plan, your family circumstances change. We hear somebody like Christopher who just called in, and in a year he's going to be in a different situation. He'll be married. Who knows? Maybe children coming. I don't know.
So yes.
Can you sign up and then drop out? Can you then re-sign up?
Let me be clear. If there is a life-changing event, loss of a job, loss of a spouse, something happens, yes, the plans are flexible and you will be accommodated. But otherwise, you're buying insurance and you need to, you know, enroll, and that will enroll you for, it's typically a year period. Mm-hmm. So, but if you have a life-changing event, then you can go back and reevaluate where you're at.
That's not any different from what it would be like if you had employer-sponsored coverage outside of the exchange.
What is this we're all hearing about health insurance companies? We get the impression massively dropping people. Is this the normal churning that goes on, or what happened here?
This affects about 5% of people who are uninsured. There are individuals. This is about individuals who have been covered through policies in the individual marketplace. And the fact that the Affordable Care Act requires insurance plans to meet basic set of standards has meant that many companies have issued cancellations, because if those plans were not purchased purchased after 2010, when the Affordable Care Act passed, they were not grandfathered. Anything before then was grandfathered. And so it affects about 10 to 12 million people, but it is 5% of the uninsured.
It's a big number when you do it the other way.
It is a big number. The issue, though, is that people can go, and I know I've heard some stories about people going to the exchange and saying they haven't been able to find as good coverage for themselves that is affordable, or good coverage but less affordable than they expect. Mm-hmm. I think people really have to look, because depending on income, again, they ought to be able to access subsidies. And they really should look at, because the plans on the exchange may, in fact, offer better benefits and better networks.
Amy Faith Middleton with Jill Zorn, Francis Padilla of the Universal Healthcare Foundation of Connecticut, and also Randy Oster, who is a patient advocate and educator, and has spoken at more than 30 libraries across Connecticut. Go ahead, Amy.
Hi, I'm calling as a self-employed person, and I'm trying to apply for the exchanges, and I'm actually using a broker, and he has shared that there's a lot of confusion about what your income is when you put it down, and that it's supposed to be the projected 2014 income, a modified adjusted gross income. Which, you know, is a little tricky to do a year in advance as a self-employed person, especially if it's the adjusted gross income, because it, you know, requires some calculations that I'm not quite ready to do.
Mm-hmm.
Is that accurate? Is that what we're supposed to be putting down now?
Well, you do need to
Jill Zorn.
You would look at what your income was last year, and actually my husband's self-employed, so I know about that. It's hard to project the future. But you have to make your best guess about what your income is going to be, and the subsidy is going to be based on that. And then you should really do, as you go through the year and you see how your income is doing, if it looks like you're doing a lot better than you thought, you might want to get in touch with Access Health CT and make sure they might want to adjust your subsidy. So you should monitor it. You're going to make your best guess, and then you should just keep track of it during the course of the year to make sure, you know, if your income is lower than you thought, then you're eligible for a better subsidy. So it's something you're going to want to watch through the year.
So I'm sorry. Go ahead, Amy, as quickly as you can.
Oh, do they reimburse you if you overestimate your income and then you don't get the subsidies initially?
I don't think they will reimburse you, but it's actually a good question. I don't know how much of an adjustment they'll make in the middle of the year, but I'm pretty sure they would definitely want to make some adjustment to make sure that you don't owe, or if you're eligible for a better subsidy, you should be able to say that. That's something to check, but you do want to make sure you don't get over-subsidized. That is something definitely to guard against, because they'll be wanting you to pay that back.
Thank you, Amy, so much for your call.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We're talking about the Connecticut Insurance Exchange, which is Access CT. Maria Faith Middleton and the gang, welcome to the show.
Okay.
Hi, Maria. As quickly as you can, because we're getting toward the end.
Okay, I'll try to be quick. My business partner and I had our policies canceled by Blue Cross Blue Shield. They said that they were going to give us a new policy, and soon we got the details of the new policy, which was an HMO as opposed to a PPO where I could see my own doctors if I wanted. It's much more expensive.
It's much more expensive. So
it's
are
much more expensive, but
is this signing up for the exchange you're talking about or not?
They just said they're canceling my policy, but they were going to put us into a different policy automatically. And when I looked at the details of that policy, it was totally different from my current policy.
Yeah, fewer benefits. Yeah, and you're only allowed to use doctors in that plan. I get you.
Right, and I see doctors in New York. I live in Connecticut, so that wasn't going to work
for
me.
Yes.
So I went to the exchange. Mm-hmm. There are two gold policies that were applicable, that had sort of similar things that I needed, i.e. PPO, Maria, being able to see my own doctors.
Maria, we're getting to the end.
Anyway, I found out that one of those policies, I had been looking at it for a couple of weeks, and I found that one of those policies, they actually changed the terms of the policy within the last week. And that was
where? On the exchange?
on the exchange, on the gold plan. Ooh. And so that left me with only one choice, the most expensive option. So, I was wondering, can they actually change the terms of policies on the exchange? Should I be worried that
very
in a month
quickly, Maria, let me get you an answer. I'm so sorry to interrupt, but we're going to run out of time. Do we know Jill Zorn at this point? Can they?
I don't know.
It's changing. We don't know.
Once you've signed on the dotted line, they certainly can't change it.
But it sounds like the exchange is evolving. As always, this show is about the richness of life. You can find the books, people, and recipes and value wines, cocktails we feature right now at WNPR.org, including What's for Dinner. We wanted to say thank you to Randy Oster and also members of the Universal Healthcare Foundation of Connecticut. Just Google Universal Healthcare Foundation and you'll find out everything they do.